801. Good morning, Lillooet, and welcome to another day of live broadcasting here on CHLS 100.5 FM. My name is Jeff O'Kelly. This program is Snooze Button, and I'll be with you until 9 o'clock. We started this morning with music by Antonio Vivaldi, some cheery morning or cheery music for a gray morning. What we heard there was the first movement of a concerto for two guitars, though not really. We'll come back to that in a few minutes. That was a recording featuring Pepe Romero and Angel Romero as the soloists, and they were playing with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, conducted by Iona Brown. I'm not quite sure why there were about 6 or 7 seconds of silence at the beginning of that. It had me very worried. I thought, oh, something's gone wrong with the CD, but no, everything was fine. Yes, we will come back and hear the rest of that short concerto in a few minutes. Right now, it is time for weather and road reports. Yesterday's low, minus 0.6, but the high made it up to 14.2. Wasn't quite as sunny as Tuesday was, but still fairly nice in the late morning, mid to late morning. Went a little bit grayer in the afternoon. As of 7 a.m., the temperature sitting at 4 degrees. Environment Canada tells us mainly cloudy today with a 40% chance of showers. Snow level at 700 meters, rising to 1,400 meters this afternoon. Wind from the south at 30 kilometers per hour, gusting to 50, a high today of 12 degrees. The UV index at 3, which is moderate. Tonight, partly cloudy, a 40% chance of showers. Snow level lowering to 700 meters before morning. Wind from the south at 30 kilometers per hour, gusting to 50, then becoming light in the evening. And a low tonight of 6 degrees. Liking these overnight lows we're seeing now. Friday, a mixture of sun and cloud with a 30% chance of showers. Snow level at 700 meters, rising to 1,400 meters in the afternoon. Wind from the south at 20 kilometers per hour, increasing to 40 with gusts to 60 in the afternoon. And a high tomorrow of 12 degrees. Saturday, a mixture of sun and cloud, a low of plus 2, a high of 12. Sunday, sunny with a low of plus 4, a high of 13. And Monday, at this point, predicted to be sunny with a low of plus 4 and a high of 16. Beyond that, on the forecast, there's a 19 for Tuesday, which would certainly be nice. However, it would be even nicer if the daytime, the good daytime highs, ones up around 18, 19, if they would coincide with a weekend. That'll probably happen in the not-too-distant future. Taking a look at conditions across the country and around the province. Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, I have to do a little clicking here to try and find what I'm looking for. All right, yeah, got it in this weird format. Let's start in Fredericton, where it is plus 2 and cloudy. Montreal, mainly sunny and 0. Toronto is at 2 degrees and mostly cloudy. Iqaluit has light snow at minus 10. Winnipeg is minus 7 with light snow. Let's go with Saskatoon. Oh, no, let's go with Regina. Saskatoon's instrumentation not entirely working. Regina, partly cloudy and minus 4. They're probably very, very pleased about that. It's been cold for an awfully long time in Saskatchewan this year. Yellowknife, minus 30 degrees and mainly sunny. I think they were minus 34 yesterday, so that's a slight improvement at any rate. Edmonton, minus 11 degrees and sunny. Calgary has mist at minus 5 degrees. Whitehorse, mainly clear and minus 13. In Prince George, it is minus 2 and cloudy. And a little closer to home, Clinton, cloudy and 0. Hope, plus 3 and mostly cloudy. Kamloops, mostly cloudy and plus 2. Plus 3 degrees in Pemberton. And in Vancouver, it is mostly cloudy and 7 degrees. And I have no highway notes to give you this morning, which is very nice. So since we're not going to do that, let's talk about a bird. Walking to the studio this morning, I heard Western Meadowlark again. I did yesterday morning and the evening before that, and it makes me think that maybe one has taken up residence in my general area. I certainly hope so. Western Meadowlarks, like Eastern Meadowlarks, are members of, curiously, members of the blackbird family. You would not know it looking at them. If you're unfamiliar with this bird, it is roughly robin-sized, but has a shorter tail. They're often found on fences and fence posts. You'll see them on telephone wires and sometimes at the tops of trees. In fact, the one I saw this morning was at the top of a tree. You saw and heard. The bird has sort of a speckled grayish brown and white back. And then it's got a brilliant yellow breast with a black V on the breast. So if you've seen that, you've seen a Western Meadowlark around. But it's the voice I want to mention because it's so beautiful, and probably a lot of people hear them in this area and may not know what they are. Anyway, let's give a quick listen here. This is from the allaboutbirds.org website. So you heard some song and then a couple of call notes at the end there, described here as the buoyant flute-like melody of the Western Meadowlark. The meadowlarks we have in our area sing much more beautifully than that one did. It may just be because that was recorded so up close to the bird. You heard one in the distance, and that had sort of that more ethereal kind of quality that I associate anyway with the sound of the Western meadowlark. So keep your eyes and your ears open. Very beautiful birds, and they'll be here singing lots all this spring. Usually you find them in, you'll find high concentrations of them, in fact, in areas where there is agricultural activity. They're largely insect eaters, but you see and hear them here in town as well. Okay, that's enough birdie stuff. So let's go back to Vivaldi and hear the remaining two movements of this concerto for two guitars. It was originally a concerto for two mandolins and strings. I actually went online this morning and looked through all 812 entries in the Ryam catalog. That's the catalog of all of Vivaldi's compositions, or all the ones that we know of, including some that are completely lost to us. And I was going there to try and determine, did Vivaldi actually write any concertos that were for specifically the guitar? But no, he wrote some for mandolin, some for lute, not that many for either instrument. And then there are a number of his violin concertos that have been arranged as guitar concertos. But the guitar in Vivaldi's time was considered to be sort of a lower class folk instrument. It wasn't a suitable vehicle for classical music. And in fact, it's kind of a good idea to play this piece on two guitars because the mandolins, yes, that this was originally written for, they are just not as sonorous an instrument as the guitar. And so this allows you to have a slightly larger body of strings accompanying the guitars, and just everything balances out a little nicer. So we've got two movements left, the Andante and the Allegro, and we hear once again Pepe and Angel Romero, who I think are father and son, but I'd have to look that up to be 100% certain about it. There's a whole series of Romeros who hold a dynasty of Romeros who are guitar players. Here they are once again with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, and the conductor is Iona Brown. Thank you. Music of Antonio Vivaldi. We've been listening to the Concerto for Two Guitars, originally a Concerto for Two Mandolins. That was a recording featuring Pepe and Angel Romero playing the guitars, and they were performing with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, conducted by Iona Brown. I really like that little concerto. It's like all of Vivaldi's concertos, quite modest in scale, but just very attractive and good cheery music. Okay, it's 8:20. Let me tell you what's coming up today on Radio Lillooet. When the snooze button wraps up, I will leave you with the Jazz Blues Soul playlist today. And we'll try once again to switch things up to Lillooet Secondary School, Studio 1 there, around 11. Student broadcasters Grace and William, when we manage to get them hooked up, will be on the air between roughly 11:25 a.m. and 12:15. But I'm not entirely certain that that connection will be working today. We'll just keep trying. Let's see. Later this afternoon, Democracy Now! Between 3 and 4 p.m. And I have an apology to make. Yesterday afternoon, I was supposed to play The First Years, the show that comes to us from Helena at the Family Place. Helena sent me a new show yesterday, and I was very excited to play it, to receive that, and said I was going to play it yesterday afternoon. And then I had a memory breakdown and forgot to do so. So I will try to remember to get that on the air this afternoon at 4 p.m. right after Democracy Now! Then later in the evening, 6 p.m. is Wendy's Wonderland, an encore presentation, not a live version, but a pre-recorded show. Okay. Oh, and other thing I want to mention, Lyle LaRochelle will be back on the air starting tomorrow night. He runs a show from 6 until 8 on Friday nights called The Six Mix, so stay tuned for that. Glad that Lyle is going to be back. Let's turn now to music by Franz Schubert. We're going to hear the scherzo and trio that come from his string quintet in C major. Schubert wrote this piece in the last, just the last few months of his life. I believe it was completed just about 2 or 3 months before he died. Somewhere 2 to 3 years before this, Schubert's, both his skill, level of skill, and his level of inspiration as a composer of chamber music just suddenly shot upwards. Not really sure exactly how or why that happened, but the chamber works that come from his last 2 or 3 years of his life are on a completely different plane from most of the works that precede them. And this quintet is no exception. Many people feel it's Schubert's very best chamber piece, and I have talked to more than one musician who has played this piece who would make the claim that this is the greatest piece of chamber music ever written. And that's a pretty big claim to be making, but I would have a hard time arguing with it. I can maybe think of a few others that I might feel like they are slightly more favorites of mine, but I would not argue with anybody that wanted to claim this as the greatest piece of chamber music ever written. The quintet is written for two cellos, one viola, and two violins. Slightly unusual combination. There had been string quintets before this time, primarily by Mozart. He wrote a set of six of them, which are absolute masterpieces, but he used only one cello and two violas instead. So this one had a slightly different sound, a little more bass-heavy sound, and maybe a little more orchestral sound because of the use of two cellos. The cello has such a wide range, it can fill in, work in a wide variety of ranges. It can be playing up with the violins or in the middle with the violas or down in the bottom. The scherzo and trio, it's in what is known as ABA format. The outer scherzo sections enclose the central trio section, and the word trio here is slightly misleading because it's still all five instruments playing, but at an earlier stage in music history, in the middle of what had previously been a scherzo, which was the minuet, there had always been a section called a trio, in which case, if you go back to the Baroque period, the orchestra or the performing ensemble was reduced in scale in that section to actually three instruments or three voices speaking usually. By the time that Schubert came around to write this, the word trio had simply come to refer to the structural function of this section of the piece, that it's the middle section of a scherzo. It is somewhat slower, usually, or at least different in character from what precedes and follows it. The outer scherzo sections are very lively, and I guess they're in a major key. I think you could sort of call them cheerful, but there's sort of there is an intensity to those sections that is kind of almost frightening in some way. And then in the central trio section, Schubert changes the time signature. He puts it in 4-4 instead of 3-4. And it's in a different key, and it's much slower. And Schubert seems to be in this section asking questions, questions about life and death and the whole damn thing, pretty much, and not necessarily finding any answers to those questions. It's very, very introspective. Anyway, this is truly a miraculous piece of music. At times he makes the string ensemble sound almost like a full orchestra here. Let's listen to this recording with the Alban Berg String Quartet, and the second cellist is Heinrich Schiff. Thank you. Completely amazingly inspired music by Franz Schubert there. We've been listening to the third movement, the Scherzo and Trio, that comes from the String Quintet in C Major. And that was a recording featuring the Alban Berg String Quartet with Heinrich Schiff playing the second cello part. I really don't have any other great words to say about that music, just because it's beyond great words. Someday I should, in the not-too-distant future, bring in one of the other movements, either the first or second movement of that piece to play as well, because in their own ways they're just as amazing, maybe even more so. Okay, it's 8:36. Just before I do some public service announcements, two things on the Guardian website today, if you're interested in... for cooks who are interested in Hungarian goulash. I'm not sure if I'm saying that exactly right, but close. You will find an interesting article about goulash there. And, oh yes, I checked in on Flower, the hummingbird that has her own live cam on Vancouver Island, a nest cam. And Flower is doing well this morning. I've seen her... face both directions on her nest, making sure, I don't know quite what the point of that is. I guess it doesn't really matter. Most of the time she faces, though, so faces to the left, at least as you're looking at it, which means you get a great view of her bill, and every now and then she sticks out her tongue and you can really see how long it is. The camera is located very close to the nest, or has a great zoom capacity, and so you have a really tremendous view, and the nest is beautifully disguised with all sorts of lichens and bits of spider web and stuff like that. If you want to find Flower, the she's an Anna's hummingbird. If you want to find her on YouTube, you just go to YouTube and do a search for Hummingbird Live Cam, and up she will come. And during daytime hours, yes, it is live streaming video of her. Very cool. Okay, public service announcements. Let's start with the pool schedule as usual. Aquafit coming up in about another 20 minutes. That runs from 9 until 10 a.m. on Tuesday and Thursday mornings. Everyone welcome from 10:30 to 11:30, lane swimming 11:30 until 1. Everyone welcome 3:30 until 5, and lane swimming again 7 until 8 p.m. The daffodil sale is on today. The Lillooet Division of the Canadian Cancer Society is holding its annual daffodil sale, and they will be at two locations, the post office and the Old Mill Plaza. The daffodils go on sale at 8:30 a.m., and they will continue to be sold until they're all gone. The cost is $5 a bunch, and all proceeds go to the Canadian Cancer Society. Two annual general meetings taking place in close proximity. They are actually, in terms of location, in very close proximity. They are identical proximity. Temporally, they are in close proximity. I don't know why I'm talking this way. The annual general meeting of the New Beginnings Community Society is at 11:30 a.m. That's at the Learning Center, number 76 Fifth Avenue. And although there had been plans to basically scrap the society, there is a renewed interest, and looks like there's going to be a new board and that sort of thing. So that's at 11:30 today at the Learning Center, followed immediately at noon by the Lillooet Learns annual general meeting, and lunch will be served at that AGM. So why not go to both? The dodgeball tournament is coming to the rec center. It will be on Saturday, April the 12th, but team registration is due by tomorrow at the latest. The cost is $40 per team. There must be 6 to 8 players per team. It's open to ages 12 and up, and co-ed teams only. If you'd like more information or would like to register, get in touch with the rec center at 250-256-7527. And the Earth Day yard sale is coming April the 5th. That is at 554 Main Street. Sorry, 554 Main Street. It runs from 9 until 2 p.m. Donations could still be dropped off, though, at any time on the porch. That's a private residence. And also, the Lillooet Legion is looking for volunteers to help with the yard cleanup that is going on this Saturday from 10 a.m. until noon. They also have a general meeting happening Tuesday, April the 8th at 7 p.m. And a turkey bingo put on by Lillooet Minor Hockey on Sunday, April the 13th at 5:30 p.m. That is it for public service announcements. We're going to turn now for most of the rest of the hour to music by Maurice Ravel. We're going to hear the Valse Noble et Sentimentale. There is a Schubert connection here. Schubert had written a number of waltzes for piano, little standalone waltzes. They're nothing too fancy, but they're very attractive. I don't know if it was Schubert himself that named them or if it was a publisher, but they were published as the Valse Sentimentale et Noble. And so Ravel just twisted that around and made it Noble et Sentimentale, Noble and Sentimental Waltzes, in order to just get a little variety to the name. But he also was very definitely intending this piece as an homage to Schubert somewhat, which makes it a little surprising because these are quite dissonant pieces in many respects. Now, he wrote this set of pieces. They're intended to be played together, unlike Schubert's, which can be played separately. This forms one sort of not quite continuous work, but one integral work that, as far as I know, nobody ever separates out the waltzes. He wrote it as a piano piece in 1911, and then just a year later, the orchestrated version was published. In the piano version, the dissonance that I mentioned is very prominent. You really notice it on the piano because it just is more of a crunchy sounding instrument when you have two notes that are really close to each other. In the orchestral version, which we're going to hear, is although none of the notes are changed, it just seems a little less dissonant because you have the different timbres of the instruments that tend to not take away, but at least mute some of that dissonance. This music was originally performed at a series of concerts. This, the piano version, was originally performed at a series of concerts in which works by new composers were presented anonymously. The names of the composers were not given, the idea being to not prejudice the listener in advance if that listener did have a particular like or dislike for a specific composer. And lots of people made guesses as to who had written these pieces. Only a few people in the audience seemed to think of Ravel. This is definitely Ravel in sort of his more neoclassical mode than in his impressionistic mode. The rhythms are very, very clear-cut, and when you look at the piano score, the textures are quite simple as well. Doesn't mean it's an easy piece to play. It's not at all. But it's not full of the really decorative, richly sort of exotic sound of writing you find in many of his more overtly impressionistic pieces. So, let's listen to L'Orchestre Symphonique de Montréal, which is so much fun to say in French, that's why I always do, and the conductor is Charles Dutoit. Thank you. That was music by Maurice Ravel. We've been listening to the Valse Noble et Sentimentale, Noble and Sentimental Waltzes. That was a recording featuring l'Orchestre Symphonique de Montréal with conductor Charles Dutoit. I'll admit that's probably not my favorite orchestral work by Ravel, maybe not even among my top three or four favorites, but there's nothing by Ravel I've heard that's bad, and I do enjoy that piece a great deal. I just don't listen to it quite as often as some of his other works. Okay, it's 8:59. We have encores to get through, and we're continuing the Schubert theme, or the Schubert associations here. Very strong associations in this case. I've been featuring music all week for the encores that had something to do with water. And so what we're going to do today is listen to the same piece twice in two different versions. We're going to hear the song Auf dem Wasser zu singen by Schubert. In its original form, a song for voice and piano, and then we will hear Franz Liszt's arrangement of the same song, just for solo piano. Auf dem Wasser zu singen means to be sung on the water. This is to a poem by Leopold Graf zu Stolberg. Stolberg, great name. The poem features largely nature imagery through its first two verses. And then the third verse changes a little bit. I should mention this is what's known as a strophic song, so you get the same music three times in a row, exactly the same music three times in a row, certainly exactly the same on the piano, with really only the words of the poet there and the skill of the singer to provide variety along the way. That said, the music itself is so incredibly beautiful in this song, I would probably listen to it six or seven or eight times in a row without any real variation. So as I mentioned, the first two verses deal largely with nature imagery, but then it takes a bit of a turn in the third verse and is one of those many romantic poems which associates, well, just about anything with death. The romantic poets, I wouldn't say they were death-obsessed, but it was something that was, they didn't shy away from it in their poetry. As it happens, Leopold Graf zu Stolberg. Stolberg wrote this when he was on his honeymoon, and he dedicated this to his wife. And I would just point out that very few poets, other than romantic poets, would dedicate songs that are ultimately about death to their new brides, or would even write them on their honeymoon. They would usually find something else to do. So the last verse, the translation reads, "Alas, with dewy wings, time vanishes from me on the rocking waves. Tomorrow let time again vanish with shimmering wings as it did yesterday and today until on higher, more radiant wings I myself vanish from the flux of time." Really kind of beautiful imagery in there as well. So let's hear the Schubert original, and then we will turn to Cuban-born pianist George Bolet. You might think his name is Jorge, but he himself went by George once he had left Cuba anyway. And when Liszt makes his arrangement of this, he does vary the music from verse to verse, changes the texture each time around, and instead of Schubert's three verses, he makes it into four verses. So the first one is fairly straight, sticks fairly close to what Schubert wrote, just incorporating the voice part in with it as well. And then he starts to vary the texture more, and by the fourth verse that Liszt gives us, he turns it into something much more dramatic. I'll be honest, I think that he maybe slightly overplays his hand in terms of the meaning of the song and the mood of the original song, but it just works as a piece of music. You don't have to think of it as a song, and you can totally dissociate it from the poetry at this point. When I listened to this recording with George Bolet a couple of days ago, initially I was rather disappointed by it. I thought, well, this is kind of dull, the way he started it. But as he continues through the four verses that Liszt gives us, he adds drama, and in the fourth verse really turns it on, showing the wisdom of an old campaigner there. And he makes the fourth verse into quite a dramatic and somewhat a virtuosic statement. So first, Brigitte Fassbender, mezzo-soprano Brigitte Fassbender, singing the song with Graham Johnson on the piano, and then George Bolet playing Liszt's transcription. That was not Auf dem Wasser zu singen. Let's try once again.
Selber entschwingt